There are no people in the future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome to Raging Chickens Out to Coop Live. Yes, it is a special Wednesday show for June 16, 2021. On Out to Coop Live, we talk to progressives, activists, and troublemakers of all sorts, right from our own backyards and from across the country. On Friday, Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. And check out the brand new, The Wednesday Show with Cyril Michalako. Cyril's a progressive columnist from the Bucks County Courier-Times, and he joins me every Wednesday at 10:30 a.m. We drill down into Bucks County, PA, PA politics, international politics. You can see it, you can check it all out. And you can get all our shows by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month at patreon.com/rcpress. And if you're just listening to this show on YouTube, if you're joining us on YouTube this evening, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Make sure you like this stream and make sure you hit that little notification bell so that you know every time that we go live, and share it out with your friends. And we're also broadcasting live on riverside.fm. Yes, you can join us at all the places that we have. And you can always get the show in a regular podcast stream whenever you want. For more PA Progressive Talk, tune into the Rick Smith Show's live stream at 9 p.m. Eastern on his YouTube channel, Twitter, or Facebook, you know, anywhere you get your streams. And make sure you subscribe to his daily podcast. Get all his information at thericksmithshow.com. And you absolutely must check out, if you have not already, the newly launched Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. Yes, the amazing PA women stirring the political cauldron behind this podcast rock the house, and they know where the bodies are buried. Spooky, right? Well, make sure to follow them on Twitter at The Night Caucus. That's on Twitter at The Night Caucus. And subscribe to their podcast on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. And attention gamers, The Game Inn, that's with two N's. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show. You know, the family of my son's best friend, right? So you got to support these folks. They're absolutely awesome. They've got everything from retro N64s, latest consoles, video games for all platforms, loads of collectibles, Funko Pops, and kids get, look, discount for every A in the report card. What more can you want? Check them out at The Game Inn. That's with two N's on Twitter. And check them out on their Facebook page. Just look up at The Game Inn and drop them an email at thegameinpa@gmail.com if you have any questions or looking for anything in particular. And a special shout out goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. And check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page. And follow him on Twitter at @songadayman. That's again with two N's, at @songadayman on Twitter. So tonight, I am thrilled tonight to welcome to the show Kadita Kenner. Kadita is the executive director of the New Pennsylvania Project. The New Pennsylvania Project was founded in May 2021 to expand Pennsylvania's electorate so it reflects the Commonwealth's demographically changing population. They will engage and empower young residents and those living in underrepresented and often neglected communities of colors and immigrant communities. And like we, you know, if it was not too soon, right, this is the right time that we have this project going on as we see the assault happening against voting rights, especially for communities of color and the poor. Kadita Kenner is the founding executive. Oh, I'm sorry, you already said it. Beginning in May 2021, Kadita became the executive director of the New Pennsylvania Project, an organization modeled after the successful New Georgia Project and the Fair Fight Georgia, both founded by former Georgia gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams. New Pennsylvania Project civically engages, registers, mobilizes, and empowers often ignored constituents, especially the youth and communities of colors in urban and suburban Pennsylvania, and a year-round effort to change and expand the electorate in the Commonwealth. And Kadita, if you talk to anybody who knows her, I mean, they'll tell you this, right? I don't even need to tell you this, but they will tell you this like firsthand. She's a tireless advocate of social economic justice issues and is motivated to empower and excite the electorate to enthusiastically vote in every election and all the way down the entire ballot. And this is the critical point. A Temple University graduate was born outside Pittsburgh and currently lives in Harrisburg. Although she grew up in Westchester, Pennsylvania, coincidentally, the birthplace of her organizing hero, civil rights icon, Bayard Rustin. Welcome to the show, Candida.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Raging Chicken Press. I love this.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I can't tell you. I said this to you before the show, and I'll say it again for everyone to hear. When people began to find out that you were going to be heading the New Pennsylvania Project and that we were going to see a kind of Stacey Abrams-style organization right here in Pennsylvania, I think there were a lot of people that breathed a sigh of relief, especially given the assaults that we see happening in kind of like access to the voting box and voting rights in general. So, you know, just thank you for stepping up and being in this role. I can't tell you how amazing that is alone.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I'm excited to bring this to Pennsylvania. It's long overdue and it's needed.
I'll say. So for those folks who are kind of just getting wind of the what is going on here in Pennsylvania or kind of recognizing there's a problem, why don't we kind of just spend a little time talking about what the New Pennsylvania Project is all about and kind of how you see what the organization's role, especially at this time when we see voting rights under assault.
Right. Lots of issues in Pennsylvania in the last several years. And we can look at the 2020 election and see how close that election was here in Pennsylvania with Biden carrying that by, almost 80,000 votes. But, you know, with all that success that folks may have felt, it was those down ballot races that are a big cause for concern for many of us. You look at the fact that we lost so many of the row offices, the treasurer's office, the auditor general's office, and then the General Assembly. You know, there was high expectations that the General Assembly would look a little differently coming out of the 2020 election. And if not, it turned a little more conservative. And so there's opportunities here in this state that we have to do something different in this moment to change things around. If you look at registration numbers here in the state, it used to be at one point, just May of 2020, where Republicans were out-registered here in the state by 800,000 votes. That number has come down in the last 12 months to 600,000. And they out-register, Republicans out-registered Democrats by almost 100,000 registrations just last year. And so there's something that must be done because, you know, you look at that group who really didn't take COVID super seriously for the most part, and they weren't concerned about still knocking on doors. They weren't concerned about having house parties. You had Donald Trump who continued to campaign from the moment he was elected. He was campaigning, and they continued to elevate their issues, and they continued to knock on doors and register voters. And so we're behind here in the state in ensuring that these communities who are often ignored are going to be seen, and we're going to engage these communities because they need to be closer to the power because they're closest to the pain. So that is the mission. That's the mission here of New Pennsylvania Project, is that we're going to get out there and we're going to engage a community that's been oftenly ignored. And we're going to make sure that we are speaking to them where they are, talking about the issues that they're concerned about, which will then in turn ensure that they register to vote so that they realize the power of their vote. And then once they've registered to vote, we then need them to actually show up to the polls and cast their ballots, that sacred vote, because it's, you know, you can go out there, a lot of us can get out there on the corner and we can register voters wherever we are, gas stations, laundromats, it's easy to register a new voter. The problem is getting them to show up to the poll.
There you go.
And then when they get there, vote all the way down that ballot.
There you go. I mean, like, and I'm so glad you're framing like the issue in this way, because, you know, I can't tell you how many times that I've heard from, you know, again, whatever you're talking about, Democratic Party operatives or people who are kind of involved in the political scene. And they'll often quote this kind of, you know, registration gap, say, but Democrats outnumber blah, blah, blah. But, you know, in some ways, you know, I'm reminded of a union campaign, right? A union campaign that goes out and says, okay, I'm going to get a whole bunch of folks to sign cards, and I'm going to get a majority of people to sign cards. But then after I get them to sign that card, I'm not going to talk to them. I'm just going to leave them alone. I'm going to assume that that card means that I've got their vote when it comes to election day. And any good labor organizer knows, sure, well, that is not the case. Just like if you are trying to get people out and mobilize and actually win elections and kind of defend a multiracial democracy, which is literally at stake right now, then you, it's the registration card is like, you know, the baby step one. And, you know, the other point that you made, the people closest to the pain need to be those in power. And unless folks that are seeing themselves being active and winning campaigns, they're never going to show up. Like, and this is what I think we need to be taken away from what happened during the Trump administration, you know, the Trump campaign, is like those folks who would never show up to the polls for anything. Right. I mean, they would like barely kind of give their neighbor a hand if they needed to. Suddenly were showing up because they saw themselves in what was happening. And again, that was an ugly face that we saw in many cases. But by framing it as like we are behind, I think is the correct message here, because that's what it seems like that your organization now is kind of positioned to do.
Yeah, we are definitely behind. There's so much work to do. You know, we're trying to engage a community, you know, the 40 and under set. So number one, there's lots of 36 year olds out there who may have voted in one election and that was it. And they decided that it's not for them anymore. And so we're talking about a disenfranchised population out here, who not only are disenfranchised politically, maybe by bad actors who are trying to suppress their votes through policy, but functionally as well. You know, these are folks who are living here in rural, suburban, and urban Pennsylvania who don't see themselves represented by the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. And so we have to now address these folks with the issues that they care about so that they vote their values and they'll see their values represented by one party over the other, in particular cases, you know, for sure. But we need to make sure that they're understanding what the issues that are out here and how they're impacting their daily lives. And by sitting back and kind of watching what's happening, they're not engaged and they're losing power. And so if we want these communities to be empowered, if we want them to take their power back, they have to exercise their franchise. It is the only way. You know, local officials, politicians, you know, when you go into their office or call their office and you have a need, you might want to get your passport expedited, or there's a pothole, or there's some issue that you're having for zoning, et cetera. You know, you reach that office and the elected official is going to find out if you're a voter or not. They're going to find out if you live in that district, and they're going to find out if you're a voter or not. And if you're someone who's on the voter rolls, you might get your concerns met a lot quicker than others. And so it's really important that everyone exercise their franchise and exercise your right to vote. And, you know, it's not cliche. You know, everyone says so many folks fought and died for everyone's right to vote in this country. That is the case. But we have to give this current generation who we're trying to reach, we have to give them more than that. They need to see that their issues are not being met, and that if they are talking about the issues and if they can speak to these issues, they will have so much more power. And that's how we're going to bring about change.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, they need to see themselves as, like, you know, characters in their own stories, not just kind of like listening to the bedtime stories that they've been handed down from previous generations. And, you know, I'm looking at what happened in Allentown, you know, in some of the Democratic primary elections there. Natalie Santos was a student of mine at Kutztown University, right? She stepped up, right? She's still in college, like, and she won a seat. You know, she won in that primary. And so now she's going on to the general election, right? And she's, campaigning with some, like, a young African-American guy from Reading. I'm spacing his name at this point. But, you know, they're kind of saying, hey, look, not only are we acting and not only are we voting, but now we can actually see that we can get involved and we can win. And it seems to me that what you just described there is that multi-step process where you get folks engaged and then you get to see folks that they're actors. They're not just being acted on. And then, right, they can see, hey, you know what? We can win. We might not be able to kind of like start the party that we want, but we could find out that, you know what, these kind of like big monoliths that we think, you know, people say like Democratic Party, what are they going to do for me? They don't represent me, whatever. But you know what? You find out that they're, you know, they're big stories, but you can push them and you can kind of like, you know, hollow out chinks in there where you can actually kind of push the party in a much more progressive direction, or at least in a direction that reflects your own experiences. And it seems to me like, you know, if we've got folks engage with elections and not just in registering, but actually getting out to vote, and they get to see that they have an effect, it seems to me that we're also building the next generation of leaders that are capable of representing, you know, more accurately representing, right, or like who exists in Pennsylvania right now.
Absolutely. You know, the demographics here are changing in the state. That has some folks concerned as well. We are now 24% of Pennsylvanians are people of color. So the demographics are changing. And so that's really important to note. You know, I want to say this about the New Pennsylvania Project as well, is that, you know, we're not just going to jump into communities, you know, 3 months outside of an election and then ask for someone to register to vote and then ask someone for their vote for a particular candidate. That's not our goal. Our goal is to be in these communities 365. You know, we vote here in the Commonwealth twice a year. You know, every May, every November, we vote in the Commonwealth twice a year. And it's unfortunate that you can go into neighborhoods right now, and I was just in, you know, several over the last few days here, talking about the May primary and asking individuals I see on the street, did you vote in the May primary? They didn't, number one, didn't know there was a May primary. Right. And not only that, but they weren't even sure they were allowed to vote in primaries. They thought it was just a general election. So there's so much of, you know, the constituency out here that just needs to be educated about what's happening. We've taken civics, a lot of civics out of schools and not engaging students in this information. Or there's some of us who didn't have civics lessons, you know, 30 years ago or so. We don't know the difference between the federal government and the state government and what they can do for us. And so it's so important right now to educate the constituency that's out there so that they can make empowered decisions and vote their values. But they have to register to vote and they have to show up to vote. And Kevin, what I can say is, you know, the election, you know, the last election here, 2016, what it showed is that we were complacent in what we considered this democracy. We figured we went to the polls, we did our job in November, we walked away, we let government do its thing. And then a lot of folks found out once the results of that election came out that this is not just a vote and walk away. That's the least you can do. Casting your ballot is the least you can do. You have to follow up. You got to hold these elected officials accountable. And then you yourself need to figure out if it is you that needs to run and be the leader in your community. Because no one knows a community better than someone who comes from inside. And so when the New Pennsylvania Project is knocking on your door, know that it is someone from your community who is knocking on your door to engage you in conversation, figure out what it is that are the issues that are moving you or not moving you, and make sure that you're then registered to vote. Everyone in your household is registered to vote. You know, and then you get out there and exercise that franchise.
I mean, what I've loved about what kind of what your organization is set up to do, like what they've done kind of with the New Georgia Project, what we've done in kind of in similar movements in states across the country, is they're starting with the local and in the communities. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to, I'm going to educate you on Democratic Party issues or Republican Party issues, something like that, saying what is happening in your community, right? What do we need to be able to address? You know, and again, I'm, you know, the first interview I ever did with Raging Chicken was with Noam Chomsky, right? I was like, you know, he was speaking at Kutztown University. And I said, what the hell, you know, I'm a little startup organization, you know, I'll see. But, you know, sure enough, he gave me like a 45-minute interview, you know, and we talked. It was just right in the wake of Occupy Wall Street. And we talked a little bit about, you know, what kind of hopes he sees in it. And so the thing that the story that he told and I hear from organizers that I talk to all the time is like, it's all major organizations, right? Powerful organizations that build power start from something like, you know, there needs to be a traffic light on a corner because kids keep on getting hit when they're coming home from school. And to get the community together to realize that's an issue and how do we make sure that we get that? And once they win that, they've done that together now, right? And they've kind of become your next round of leaders. And they start asking the questions and the organizations that are building around them say, what else do we need, right? And it seems to me is like, you know, by being in the communities, like you said, not just being, you know, the organizations that are going to come in and say, hey, you know, sign up for vote and get out and vote and then disappear or disband. You know, you got the organizations that, you know, they disappear. The names go away. You don't even know who was involved with them. But that has never been like the mission of the kind of project that you're working on right here, from my understanding.
Yeah, you know, I got to spend some time down in Atlanta with the New Georgia Project folks. I spent a little time with the COO, Kendra Cotton. And, you know, she gave me a little hint into the secret sauce of what they were able to accomplish down there in Georgia. And, you know, if you ask the New Georgia Project folks, you know, who they are, the first thing they will say is we are a civil rights organization.
Yeah.
They are a civil rights organization because obviously votes were suppressed, voters were disenfranchised racially and all kinds of other ways down in Georgia. And, you know, Kevin, to be honest with you, you know, I consider Pennsylvania sometimes the most northern southern state because if you pay attention to what's happening currently in our General Assembly, it's not much different than what's happening down in Texas, what's happening in Georgia and other places. And so, yes, it is a very important that we engage these communities 365, stay in the community, build power within the communities, and address the needs. So when New Georgia Project knocked on doors in 2012, when they were founded, they knocked on doors talking about the ACA. They talked about health care. That was the issue. They knocked on door talking about issues, not about join this political party, but talking about the issues. And we're going to do the same here in 2021, 2022, is that we're going to knock on doors and we're going to talk about legalization of marijuana. We're going to talk about fair funding for K-12 education and higher education. We're going to talk about economic justice issues and our need to raise the minimum wage here in the Commonwealth. We're going to talk about housing. We're going to talk about all the inequalities that is currently going on and what we're noticing now more than ever because of the global pandemic. So, you know, we're going to talk about the issues that people care about, and we're going to listen to the communities, because no one can tell you what the community needs more than those in the community.
There you go.
Because why knock on the door and talk about policing reform if policing reform isn't top of mind for this particular community? So we're going to talk about issues and turn that into registration, and that will organically turn into a get out the vote. Because once you've engaged these communities year round and you have their trust, and you're speaking to the issues they care about, and you're educating them about these issues that they care about, they're going to get out and vote because they're going to see the importance of their vote. And that's the most important thing we can do right now.
100%. So let me ask you this. I'm curious your perspective on this. So, you know, one of the things that, let me give you my perspective and see where this sits with you. So, you know, one of the things that we saw with, say, Obama's election, right, is that if we go, I mean, I know that that's a ways back now, but with Obama's election, there was that mobilization up until the vote. But there was that sense afterwards, you know, and I don't think it was, I mean, we could get into the nitty gritty of why this happened, things like this. But I think a lot of people said, OK, you know, when Obama said, OK, I got this. Right. That was, you know, I won. Right. And it was like historic, amazing. And people said, fantastic. It's in good hands. I'm going to go, you know, back to my TV shows. You know, I'm going to go back to, you know, Little League and things like that. I mean, not that we shouldn't be going back to any of that stuff. But and I think a lot of folks, at least on the, say, progressive end of politics in here, certainly kind of, I think, felt burnt in the end. And, you know, and some of that led to bad feelings within just Obama, but really it had to do with, from my perspective, at least kind of the structures of the way that we do elections in this country. And it seems to me that, especially after the election of Trump, is that you've got lots of organized constituencies right now that have learned their lessons, right? And so it seems to me that not only is like what you're saying to be absolutely critical, but from my perspective, it also seems that this is a particularly ripe moment where people are hungry for organization, and they see it kind of within their grasp, and they're looking for ways of mobilizing power. I mean, does that kind of gel with kind of how you see the past several years?
Absolutely. You know, I'm going to go back for a moment to the election of Obama, 2008. Mm-hmm. I was actually working on that campaign in 2008 in Paoli, Chester County. Mm-hmm. And it was just so exciting. The times were so exciting. You know, everyone had a common goal, and it was to get that man elected. And so, you know, it was so inspiring to see the folks who were coming into the office to volunteer. I mean, from all walks of life. Here I'm in Chester County. There's all kinds there in Chester County. So people walking in and wanting to volunteer. And it just looked like America in that campaign office. And it was so inspiring. And so people felt it was, you know, a moment of exhilaration, right, on election night. And then 2 years later, we do what we do here in this country. And then we change. We don't give the president someone he can work with. And then, you know, 2010, what does that look like? You know, completely different kind of Congress he's dealing with. So we have that same situation here. We're coming in into 2022 very soon. We're going to have a new governor in the Commonwealth. And so what are voters going to do? Because we see what we've been able to accomplish or not get done with the current General Assembly that we have here in the state. And if it wasn't for the veto pen of the current governor, Governor Wolf, I can't imagine, you know, the kind of laws that would be right now on the books.
Totally.
So, you know, it's so important that the folks understand, because you will get out for these 4 years. Every 4 years, we'll get out for that presidential election and we'll vote the top of the ticket. But then, you know, we're walking away from the rest, or we're not really engaged or paying attention to the rest of that ballot. And we have to pay attention to the down ballot races. And that's municipal, judicial elections. You know, that's the federal elections. All of them, all of these elections matter. And I can't think of a more consequential time in our history than what's going to happen here in 2022 when we cast these ballots for these, you know, the Senate, for, you know, all these seats in the Congress, for the governor's race, and then leading up to 2024's election. This is just such a consequential time, and we're on a precipice of something here great. The energy is just so magnetic. You know, I can tell you when I'm doing these Zoom calls now or doing little presentations and informing, you know, different counties that I'm talking to about the work that we're going to do, people are just excited. And they're ready for something to happen that's going to be different than what's already happening, because we know we have to do something different, because what we've been doing is just not going to be enough. Biden's, you know, got in by the skin of his teeth here. That's going to be a whole different look here in 2022 if we don't get activated here and transform this electorate and expand this electorate and make sure that everyone who has the right to vote is doing so.
Yes, absolutely. And we have got Colleen Gray Nguyen, who comes in and basically says, yeah, and the state legislature, and how important it is to have the state legislature. You know, I think this is one of the, you know, one of the crazy things that come across all the time is that we know, it seems, right, we know the least about our local and state governance, right? We know more about kind of like what's happening at the national scale. And again, it's media structures and all sorts of reasons for that. But it's almost the most difficult to kind of find your way in to finding out what's happening in state politics. And so, again, this is, becomes part of that process. So let me ask you this. It's like here's one of these examples of how the non-presidential election years matter. This is just remarkable. We saw, you know, on the ballot, right, during these primaries, we saw, you know, the removal of Governor Wolf's emergency power order, right? That this was on the ballot. And of course, this is how they work. When people put those, you know, those resolutions, whatever, on the ballot, they phrase them in such a way that they always sound good. Like, even if they're the most horrible thing in the world, sounds good. And overwhelmingly, people said, yes, I'm going to vote in favor of that. And so basically what that did is it gave the legislature the opportunity to strip away the powers. But what was, I mean, again, this is like the Schadenfreude thing. Like, I'm just going to, like, you know, feel good about this horrible thing at one point. Because so that passes and the legislature goes ahead and the Republicans strip it out, right? And they say, yes, we're going to take away his emergency powers. And then what happens? Like, the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board comes out and basically tells all these restaurants who had outdoor seating and were doing cocktails, I'm sorry, but that was part of the emergency order. You got to shut down now. And now there's these people that are up in arms about this, and they're like, what's going on? I mean, I know that's a small instance, but I mean, that affects the livelihoods of some of the people that were hit the hardest by the pandemic. And it's like, you know, it's this thing on a ballot during a primary that doesn't seem like a big deal or seems, but it has huge, huge implications for people in our, like in our communities.
You know, I'm glad you brought up these referendum questions on our ballots. Because that seems to be now the current trend of our General Assembly led by the GOP here, is that they can't pass meaningful legislation. They can't get the approval of the governor's signature. And so they want to pass the buck to voters on referendum questions. And strategically, during times when they know there's low voter turnout, right? So they want to get as many referendum questions on a ballot during a primary election and a municipal election year where they think the turnout is going to be dismal. And they succeed, because here in the state of Pennsylvania, since 1996, we have said yes to every single ballot referendum question that has come across our ballot. Since 1996, yes, every single time. And, you know, you can blame it on the wording of it, you know, here or there. The thing is that we're going to say yes because it's just, it's common nature for us to not want to say no to something we don't know what we're saying no to. So we're going to say yes.
There you go.
Because that's just common nature. And so, yes, a lot of folks got out there. And they said yes, a little bit more than those who said no. It was a close one. These referendum questions were very close this time around. And a lot of folks, you know, maybe this was a referendum on the governor and his powers during COVID times and keeping us healthy and safe and alive here in the Commonwealth. And they're not understanding the ramifications of their actions. And so now it's the, you know, mom and pop, it's the local restaurants, you know, it's the bars that can no longer do the takeout liquor. You know, you can't enjoy, you know, dining out, you know, outdoors at this time, you know, maybe because that's been shut down as well. So, you know, there are, you know, just like there's there's reactions to our elections, there's reactions to what we do at the ballot referendum questions. And so they're going to do this again. They've already talked about putting a ballot referendum question, you know, if they can get this passed in a second consecutive session so that they can change our voter election laws here, because they can't do it legislatively. So they're going to pass the buck to the voters.
So walk us through some of this stuff. Cause I don't want to get like too far into the weeds about all the particular things, but these seems to be like a couple things. We've got some initiatives that are happening in the House, and we have these referendums, which are really targeting our voting rights, access to the polls, and so on. So if you had to kind of like talk about, say, a couple of these, you know, a couple of things that we need to keep our eyes on right now that are examples that, you know, that you all are going to be mobilizing around and that we need to be aware of to kind of help that mobilization, or some of these ones that you'd pick out.
Right. You know, first off, there's one that should have been on the ballot in May, a ballot referendum question that should have been on the ballot, which was House Bill 38, which was the judicial gerrymandering bill, which would change the way in which we elect our appellate court judges here in the Commonwealth. Currently, we get to vote for all 31 of those judges who sit on the appellate courts. And House Bill 38 was going to change that and change it so we can only vote for three. One judge on the Superior Court, one on the Commonwealth, and one on the Supreme. And that was just Russ Diamond and crew, their attempts to disenfranchise us again, take the right of for us to vote for all 31 folks down to three in gerrymandered districts. And so, you know, we all got together, a big collective of a lot of different organizations, and threw down together to ensure that we were educating not only the General Assembly about what this House Bill 38 was going to do, but then reached out to the communities too and fought back. And that's the only reason that that question didn't make it to the May primary ballot where they wanted it to be. It did not get the opportunity to get voted on for that second consecutive session, but it's not dead yet. They can still bring that bill up until August of 2022. It's a zombie bill. That'll be around forever. So, you know, that's just one example of ways in which the current General Assembly led by the GOP are trying to use ballot referendum questions because to usurp their authority over another branch of government because they can't pass this legislation without doing it that way. And they're going to try this again, you know, as it comes to a voter ID. They're going to pass this along to the voter and determine whether or not, you know, they're going to make more restrictive laws that are going to be disproportionately impacting communities of color, older communities, you know, those who just don't have access to the ID that they need every single time they go out to vote. I mean, we already have a voter ID law here in Commonwealth. You got to show your ID to register. You got to show your ID. You got to provide your ID when you want to get a mail-in ballot. If you're voting for the first time in a location, you got to show your ID. We already have a voter ID. And let's not get this twisted, Kevin, because we've seen this trick before. You know, nothing is new. Everything is just being recycled here. And we already knew that Speaker Terzai, Mike Terzai, back in 2012 when he was on
voter ID.
Yeah, right? Voter ID. This is how we're going to win this election. They know what voter ID will do and who it will impact and what voters will be suppressed because of it. And that's why they're doing it. This is politically motivated. This has nothing to do about making our elections more secure or safe or making people feel they're more secure and safe. This is another power grab. This is another opportunity for folks to come out here and suppress and disenfranchise voters in the Commonwealth.
And I do think by calling this, you know, this is a civil rights kind of organization and movement and thing for precisely this reason. And, you know, I think, you know, Chris Hayes on his show All In did, I think, a really spectacular job of highlighting some of the histories of walking us through the history of the ways in which those folks in Congress at the national level were looking for ways to suppress the votes of African Americans and people of color in here. And once it became illegal for them to discriminate explicitly for race, then they just moved one step down the notch, right? I mean, then you just said like, okay, we're going to have a poll tax. Okay, we're going to have a literacy test. Okay, we're going to have, you know, X, Y, and Z. Like, we're going to have the grandfather clause, all this stuff. And their argument was, look, there's nothing racial about this, right? And this is it's the exact same language that they were using in the 1940s and the 1950s and the 1960s to argue for the kind of suppression tactics that they were after then, because they know what the results are going to be. They start from the end game and they work their way back and they say, hey, look, if we try this, we notice that there's an effect that we can game out, that it's going to disenfranchise this number of people. And yes, it'll disenfranchise some of our folks too as well, but it will disproportionately like disenfranchise African-Americans and people of color and those folks and students and people we don't want voting.
Absolutely. History continues to repeat itself. And, you know, you can go back, you know, even I'm going to take it back here for a second to talk about this judicial gerrymandering situation, because this is an example of one of our co-equal branches of government, right? I'm taking everybody back to Civics 101. One of our co-equal branches of government trying to usurp their authority over another to the point where they're duplicating the efforts that happened in the 1950s here in America. If we go back to the 1950s and 60s, that's a time when our U.S. courts, our federal courts, were overturning Jim Crow, right? So you're talking about all these different things are happening. So we're overturning Jim Crow in the 50s and 60s from our United States Supreme Court. And that upset so many folks that they had banners and billboards across the country down south and other places saying, let's impeach Justice Earl Warren, right? Let's impeach him. Well, come here, Pennsylvania, 2018. We were trying to do the same thing. We were trying to impeach our Pennsylvania Supreme Court justices here because we didn't like their decisions to overturn unconstitutional maps, right? The gerrymandered congressional maps that we had here. Our Pennsylvania Supreme Court overturned those, gave us some new maps that were much more fair. And then we had State Representative Chris Dush out of Jefferson County and others wanting to then impeach our Pennsylvania Supreme Court justices. So it's, you know, it's the same playbook. It's the same playbook. We just have to catch up to what, you know, they're trying to draw the X's and O's. We just got to catch up to where they are.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think that this is so how important about the voter education stuff and the in the community work that that's got to be done. Because, you know, if you look at something like voter ID, when it comes out, I think there's a lot of good people, right, that would vote in support of voter ID, right, because they're just thinking about it at that first level. They're like, oh, okay, well, that kind of makes sense. You know, just like the arguments that you hear, like, you have to show your ID when you get on a plane, so you have to show whenever, you know, regardless of the fact that getting on a plane is not a constitutional right, that is the foundation of democracy. But put that aside even for a second, right? But, you know, I mean, for just, you know, folks that don't pay that much attention to politics and are just going through their lives, and then they're asked to look at a question like this, you can see why they would be like, okay, oh yeah, sure, that's okay. And I think that's the momentum that has to be pushed back and stopped. So people, because once you, you know, it's not that hard to kind of explain to folks once they kind of see what the effects are going to be. And those very people that might just in good-hearted nature go out and say vote yes because they thought they were doing the right thing will suddenly stop in their tracks, and then they become like advocates because they realize that they're getting hoodwinked here.
Right. You know, I was living in North Carolina for the 2016 election. I actually worked on the Hillary campaign in North Carolina, organizer in the Charlotte office. And, you know, we were in that time, there was lots of things going on in North Carolina, but one of those was Governor Pat McCrory in North Carolina had went to the Board of Elections office and asked them, how do black folks vote? Just straight up, how do black people vote? Board of Elections said, well, according to our data, they're voting on Sundays, they're voting early.
Yep.
What did Pat McCrory do? He curbed that back. Sunday voting coming to an end. Early voting coming to an end. And the courts ruled with almost, what they call it? Surgical precision. Mm-hmm. He tried to stop the black vote. And that same thing comes here to Pennsylvania, where you're figuring out how it is that folks are voting. They need to vote with the mail-in ballots, how successful that was. Or, you know, they're needing to vote early or whatever the case may be. Or they need to use the drop boxes, right? That 24-hour drop box because they're working three shifts in different kinds of jobs and can't get to the polls on election day. So, you know, they're finding ways to suppress votes. It's just a different playbook.
100%. Well, I want to say everybody who's kind of tuned into the show right now, so I'll let you know that, like, in about just a few minutes that we're going to kind of wrap up the kind of first part of the show, and we're going to move into, this is a little bit of a different format than we've done before, but we're going to leave the kind of the last, say, 10, 15 minutes of the show for open for anybody who wants to call in, has additional comments that you'd like to throw up, in some cases that we'll have our guests will stick around, in other cases that will kind of close out, it'll just be us talking about it, so there's an opportunity to kind of share what's happening in your communities and that kind of stuff. But if you're one of those folks that have a call, or if you have a question for Kadita now, you can put it in the YouTube chat. But just about say quarter of, or about 10 of or so, we'll switch over. And if anybody does want to call in, there's information in the show notes on YouTube about how to kind of click over and join the audience on Riverside FM, where we can take your call. And I'll have some kind of wrapping up comments to make regardless. But, you know, so before I let you go, and I mean, I know that, you know, you're not exactly the person who's kind of sitting on their hands looking for something to do these days. So I don't want to take up too much of your time. You know, if you had to kind of point people in directions of where can they go, number one, the most obvious, right, is where can they go to kind of help support, find out more information about the New Pennsylvania Project? And what are some of the things that you think are front and center that they should be aware of at this point?
Yeah. So much. There's so much to do. And I'm so glad that everyone who watched what happened in 2016 and got really engaged in the political process are still hanging around. They may have gotten the result they wanted at the top of the ticket, right? They got rid of Donald Trump, but they stayed around, you know, because we know that voting is just not enough. Voting is the bare necessity. Voting is the least you can do. You have to stay engaged politically. You have to continue to hold these elected officials accountable to their vote. They asked for your vote prior to Election Day, and now they need to be held accountable to that. The other thing I want to mention here, what people can do, because there's so many who want to be engaged in this moment because they see the damage that is being done to this nation, to our democracy. They've seen the assaults on the Capitol live on TV. They've seen the continuation of perpetrating the big lie and how that's impacting the security of our elections, or how people feel about the security of our elections. And so if those who are out there watching and who want to get engaged, I encourage you right now to get involved in your local community. You know, there's lots of organizations like New Pennsylvania Project who are out here doing this work all the time. They've been out here. And what's stopping them from doing this work a lot of the times is that they just don't have the funding that they need to sustain this type of work. You know, we're going to be, all eyes are going to be on Pennsylvania in 2022. All eyes are going to be in Pennsylvania. And there's going to be some folks who are coming in and dropping off some money here in Pennsylvania to want to get work done. But they're going to drop that money off a couple months before the election when it's kind of too late. If you're someone who has the capability to give to organizations who are doing this work, give now. And give every month. Help sustain the work, the infrastructure of these nonprofits who are out here doing the work. That's really important to know. So number one, you can donate. That's always money. Money is always going to be good in work like this. It takes money to grab these folks who are hard to reach and move them into the electorate. So money is number one. Number two, get involved. You know, if you want to register some folks to vote, sign up with an organization who is doing this work, please. You know, come and join New Pennsylvania Project. Get involved with what we're doing. Go to our website, newpaproject.org, www.newpaproject.org, and find out how you can get involved and volunteer with us, how you can get engaged. I mean, I'm sure you have some folks watching from outside of the state watching this program today. You know, you may be living in Massachusetts or California where, you know, it's pretty easy there for you in those areas. And, you know, we need the help here in Pennsylvania. Help us. Get involved with that. Donate the money. Help continue to write postcards or write letters to people to get them to be engaged in the political process. We were so cut off from the whole world, you know, last year, not able to knock on doors, not able to be out in the public and engage. And we're back. You know, I'm someone who's fully vaccinated and I'm back. And we're going to be back out here and we're going to be knocking doors and getting engaged. So if you want to help out, you can donate money. You can sign up to get involved. Volunteer opportunities, and share this message. Share this message with folks you know. We live in these bubbles, Kevin, right? We all live in these bubbles. And we, you know, our social circles are all engaged in this process. But when we get outside of our bubble, there are so many who are not. And so get out of your bubble. Get out of your comfort zone. Let's start having these important conversations again around the dining room table. You know, it was not too long ago where we didn't want to talk about politics or religion. We got to talk about politics. We got to talk about religion. We got to talk about all kinds of things again.
And we've got to talk about them with our neighbors, and we've got to talk about them at the pubs, and we got to talk about them at the diners, right? You know, enough of this kind of, you know, civility doesn't mean that we only talk about the weather, right? It means that we're actively talking about things of substance that matter to us. And yes, we don't treat each other like garbage. I mean, that is not a lot to ask. It doesn't mean that we shut up about this stuff. If now more than ever, we need to be kind of engaged and talk with each other about what are the issues that are happening right here in our community and across the state that we can have an impact on. Absolutely.
Right. Got to do something different. We've got to do something different, Kevin, because what we were doing, we were getting lucky here. Things are happening, and you know, 80,000 votes is not a lot of votes. We got to do something different.
It is absolutely 100%. I want to underscore something Candida said here about the money question. You've heard me say this when it comes to kind of like progressive media in the state and so on. This is why it becomes so important. We should have learned this from the small donor campaigns that we saw with Bernie Sanders and the AOC and the squad that we saw in our own state with Elizabeth Fiedler, with Summer Lee, with Sarah Enamorato right across the board, is that not only if we stand up as individuals, we can't drop in $1 million. Well, maybe some of you can. I don't know. It's like you're not showing it to me so far, but But you know, maybe you've got that, but most of us cannot afford that. Like, we don't have what the, what kind of some of the folks who want to manipulate our elections with, through dark money have. So what we do is that we help fund the organizations that are doing that kind of work. And why? Because we also want to protect it from any big money donor. That if the more of us that get involved in us, then we become the constituents that determine the direction of these organizations, right? And this is why I'm so thrilled that Kadita Kenner is the head of this, the New Pennsylvania Project, because I know that's precisely where her commitments are. Well, I'll tell you, Kadita, you know, I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule. I mean, I know you've got 1,001 things on your plate. You're welcome to stick around if you want to kind of afterwards. Absolutely. The invitation is always open. And you'll know, too, as well, that, you know, that we're here. And, you know, this is the nice thing, too, as well, about not being bought and sold and not like right here, Raging Chicken, of not being a nonprofit, is that we can openly be in the advocacy kind of arena and kind of making sure that we're directing people in the right ways. And the only way that we can do that is kind of with everybody's help out there. So you can help out this show, too, as well, by going to patreon.com/rcpress. You become a patron for as little as $5 a month. But you know, definitely I want you to head it over to the newpaproject.org. You can kind of subscribe to their newsletter. You could sign up, find out how that you can give, and then how you can get involved, not just in kind of some abstract statewide organization, but right in your community. And you know what, if you're not finding that there's a chapter or something right in your community, you can email them and say, like, I'd like to help out and start one here. Right. So, okay. Well, hey, thank you so much for taking your time out tonight and for kind of sticking around. Appreciate it.
Kevin, I absolutely appreciate it. And, you know, you alluded to this when you introduced me, that my one of my heroes is icon, civil rights icon, Baird Rustin. And here we are in Pride Month. And I would be remiss if I did not bring to everyone's attention again what Baird Rustin said in his times here as organizing. You know, he did that in 1963, organized the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom in 63. He did that without the internet. He did that without Facebook. He did that. And so what he's known to say is that the proof that one truly believes is in action. And so when you ask, what can people do? If you truly believe, you must act. And this is the time. There's no time to be sitting on our hands right now. You know, it's not an exaggeration. We are living in special times in this moment. And we have to do something special to overcome what is happening and what we're seeing. So get busy, everybody. Take that action.
Excellent, excellent. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, it'll kind of be kind of closing thoughts and your calls. You can check into the show notes about how to log into Riverside FM and kind of enjoying the audience here. Appreciate it, Kadita Kenner. And we're going to take a quick break. And we'll be back right after this. Great discussion. Thank you. Hey, everybody, you know, here for the kind of closing segment of the night. And, I can't tell you how encouraged I am right now. Right. You know, I mean, after that conversation, I'm just absolutely thrilled. And, you know, it's I'm trying to think exactly what it is that I want to tell everybody right now. So I'm going to start with this. If anything has been at the core of what we've been saying over the years at Raging Chicken, right? It has been about the, you know, number one, direct action gets the goods, right? Number two is that it's only through our networks of solidarity that we're going to be able to take back this democracy from the kind of kleptocracy and corruption and things that we see right now. And number three, you know, I hate this old cliche, but I'm going to use it anyways right now. It says we can never let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And, you know, I think about some of the, you know, the vitriol that we can kind of see when we live our lives, particularly within social media realms, when we're not having to kind of negotiate relationships with our neighbors, but we're kind of like negotiating some kind of random relationship with some dude online. Right. I mean, it's a very different world. But when we live our lives in the world, you know, we have to kind of really think about each other as people, as living, breathing human beings that are complicated, right? That are, you know, not always kind of consistent in what we're doing, but trying to get by, you know, in the best ways that we can. And so if we can have these opportunities for, you know, to reach out with generosity for, you know, to our neighbors, to people in our communities, with that spirit of, look, the better world is within our reach. right? But it's going to only be a world that's of our own making, right? And, you know, so when we're sitting here at, you know, at Raging Chicken, and we're, you know, expanding our podcast and bringing out and trying to highlight the work that's going on in Pennsylvania, it's always been with that idea that we need to amplify each other and build our networks and kind of, you know, and together in our aggregate power, we're more powerful even more, right? So that's definitely want to kind of say that before we break off. Want to let everybody know a little programming notes. If you do have any questions, you have any things you want to call in and kind of talk about, we still got a couple minutes left in the show. You can feel free. I do want to let you know that this coming Monday, I've had so many shows, like I've been talking about this, I've been so many shows of the past year. I'm going on vacation for 2 weeks. My family and I kind of in a couple weeks, I've been kind of doubling up on some of a bunch of shows during the week. But we've got some great shows that are coming up on Monday. We've got, excuse me. Oh, I gotta hate when that happens. Monday, we got Erin Wallace. She's the proprietor of the Devil's Den, and she is the co-leader of the Pink Boot Society in Pennsylvania. And we're going to be talking about the reckoning that the craft beer industry is going through when it comes to its misogyny and its, you know, and its sexism and racism. And this really kind of pushback and an opportunity to really transform an industry, which is, you know, again, you know, I live here in Perkasie, and Free Will Brewing is right here. And to see what that has done with the community as really, and I mean that in the best sense of community, right? People coming together and have opportunities to talk in these kind of, you know, quasi public ways and building relationships in ways that they wouldn't have if that space wasn't there. And this has been the story of craft beer kind of like, you know, across the state. And Pennsylvania is the second largest producer of brewery kind of in, of beer in the country. Right. And it has proliferated. It's always recognized as being a hot spot for craft brewing. But it's also been an industry that's been dominated by white guys, right? And has a had a culture that has been kind of woven through with misogyny and racism. And to see that coming to the fore now and people having to kind of take a stand and say, where are you in all of this? And how do we ensure that these practices that we love are not contributing to the kind of the abuse of workers, the abuse of women, the abuse of African-Americans and people of color in this country is huge. So Erin Wallace will be on Monday. I'm really looking forward to her discussion, especially in the revelations of what's happened in the industry across the year. And then in the weeks that follows, where I'm going to have some pre-record shows that are coming up on Monday, I'm going to have Dana Morrison and Eleni Shermer come on. They're going to talk about college debt, and not just in terms of student debt, but the debt that state universities in particular, but also some private universities have incurred, right, as a way to try to build fancy dorms as a solution to kind of like their funding problems, right? And so they incur all this debt, and now the universities are kind of having two layers of debt, student debt, but also the individual debt. This, they're going to talk about their article that they wrote in The Nation. And then we're also going to have Chris Mazzano coming on and one of our pre-records to talk about his article in Catalyst called Can Labor Break Its Double Bind, which is a perfect timing, especially after Biden actually won election and looking at what's going to be the future of kind of labor here. Christopher said, who protected the vote in 2020? We did. There you go, Christopher. That's exactly it, right? We're the ones who protect ourselves. And anytime, you know, I've always been, look, I grew up, I've told the story before on the show, but I grew up, you know, I grew up in a single parent family, right? My sister, my sister and I are one of the few people, right? Like literally we have the records to show you this, right? That we're like one in the million who had an allergy to the old version of the MMR vaccine. So we had like horrible reaction to this. I mean, like literally it's like one in a million. And I was in a coma and things like this when I was here. I recovered. My sister was not as fortunate. My sister, when we went, she was a result also of medical malpractice. She got encephalitis, right? And she is kind of mentally handicapped as a result of that. And shortly after that took place, that I broke up my parents' marriage, right? And then I sort of grew up with, you know, a single mom with a daughter who was handicapped. And my mom had to leave work, right? Because she had to take care of my sister. Right. And then, you know, growing up in that environment and growing up on food stamps, growing up on, you know, the generosity of our neighbors, you know, who would bring home an extra chunk of cheese from the food lines. I mean, I remember those days. And I've always been very, very, and I've, you know, seen the brutality that people go through. And, you know, again, you know, I grew up in a kind of, you know, I grew up in the city of Utica, New York, and like in a white family, right, that had a whole lot of privileges, even within the kind of town of Utica. But I can tell you, the pain of poverty stings and it leaves its scars forever. And you remember things, right? You remember the feeling of what it's like standing in the grocery line when your mom is pulling out food stamps and watching that woman all coiffed, looking all nice, looking at my mom like she's a piece of garbage, right? Those things you remember, right? And so I'm always a little bit hesitant also when I hear claims from people that we're going to take care of it for you, right? That somehow those experts or those people that they better understand my circumstances than me. No. And this is why, you know, when Christopher, exactly as you said, right, we protected the vote in 2020. And I think if we want this kind of multiracial, kind of justice-filled democracy in our hopes, then we are the ones that need to defend it. And we need to act on it and ensure that we've got it. But so I'm looking at, we're just about coming up on time, everybody. Listen, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk tonight. I really appreciate you taking the time to spend some listen to Candida. And I hope you're going to get out there. Again, it's newpaproject.org. Make sure that you subscribe to the newsletter. Make sure that you're, you know, if you can, please, you know, send them a little donation, right? And let them know that you can be involved too as well. And let me say, all those folks who have been out there and been doing organizing on the ground, you know, we've given the shout outs and we've had folks on the show from like the DSA in Philadelphia and in Lehigh Valley. We've been talking to folks that have been involved with Indivisible. We've been talking to folks who've been involved with the Women's March, right? And as long as we always remember that we are not in competition, right? But together we have power, right? And yes, we're going to have differences in all this, and that's beautiful, right? Let's remember that's what's supposed to be at the core of democracy anyways, right? The idea that through the kind of diversity of opinions and ideas and this, that we come out better than we would if we had just some dictator at the top letting us know. So by all means, everybody on the ground, and we should start now. So thank you. Shout out once again goes to Candida Kenner for joining the show. I appreciate this so much. Thank you all for kind of tuning in once again. And we're going to hope you see you on Friday. We've got our special guests, right? Our special guest host, because Sean is away, is Shanna Danielson, right? And Angela Valvano. That's right. Yes, I was waiting to hear if anybody was going to kick it out, because I know that you know that they're coming on. There are also two of the women that are involved with the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. They're going to be on as guest hosts on Friday. So hope you tune in for that, and hope you tune in next Monday for Aaron Wallace from the Devil's Den and Pink Boot Society. For all the rest, this is Kevin Mahoney kind of signing out for this on this glorious evening. I know I'm feeling a little hopeful at the end of this night, and hope that you are too. Christopher says upgrade. Yep. Sean is away. Christopher sees an upgrade on our Friday show with my guest host. I'll see that. He's going to see that one, Christopher. All right. Take it easy, everybody. See ya.